It's Monday, the 13th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Steve Novak and Hassan Whiteside. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Fantrax and Preston Pickens. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Preston Pickens, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. Of course, if you want to be a sponsor like Fantrax, send me an email. Fantrax is the sponsor of this podcast, and if you don't know what Fantrax is, you need to figure it out pretty quickly, because Fantrax.com is the best place to go and host your fantasy leagues. Not only do they have great premium commissioner models, which offers you any sort of option that you can think of, anything that you would have scrawled in a notebook, written onto a spreadsheet, posted in a forum about, Fantrax handles it automatically, but they also offer the best free option to host your fantasy league. It's not just basketball, it's not just football, it's not just baseball. You can go NASCAR, golf, college football, college basketball. Nine major sports are covered by Fantrax. You can handle things, dynasty leagues, minor league squads, European stash players, college players onto an NBA team, salaries, contracts, future draft pick trading, non-snake drafts, like so set order drafts, auctions, anything you can possibly think of, playoff leagues, leagues started halfway through the season. Fantrax has all of these other major sites covered easily. Anything you can think of, and I guarantee you go and sign up over at Fantrax.com, take a look at all the options, just create a dummy league, and you'll be blown away by all the different options that you can have when setting up a league. It's not just a simple, what categories do you want, how many teams do you want. You can do a plethora of things on Fantrax, and it clearly is the best. If you're serious about fantasy, and if you listen to this podcast, especially at this time of the year, you're serious about fantasy, go across to Fantrax and check it out. We are doing the Los Angeles Clippers Season in Review podcast today. So,
let's get to it.
I'll do my best. If you're watching this live on YouTube and you want to tweet at me, you can always do that by tweeting at me at redrock_bball. Los Angeles Clippers. What's the best way of phrasing the way that their season was? There'll be plenty of you listening to this and plenty of people out in the general public that think that it was a huge disappointment. Clippers are trash. Chris Paul is garbage. Can't get into the conference finals and didn't even get past the first round. Blow the team up. I can sort of understand that, but you've heard my thoughts on that sort of stuff plenty of times. They had a 53-29 record. They did that without their second best player for the majority of the season in Blake Griffin. They were 2-0 up against the Portland Trail Blazers in round one of the playoffs. And not just 2-0 up. They were 2-0 up with two absolute ass-kickings. They were going to win that series, and they were probably going to beat the Golden State Warriors, who were likely going to be without Steph Curry for the first few games of that series. That's probably what was going to happen. And then Chris Paul went down with a broken finger. Then Blake Griffin went down with a quad tear again, which he, you know, honestly shouldn't have been coming back from and playing. It obviously wasn't right, and he risked himself to get back out there. So if you put anything on the Clippers for being chokers, for being non-winners, then I'm sorry, you're wrong. Yeah, you can go back to last season and they lost 3-1 against the Rockets, but you know I don't believe in choking men. All this sort of... I hate the narrative. But this season, there is no way you can put this on the Clippers. They were primed for a huge run, and honestly, they had a massive, massive chance of getting themselves into the NBA Finals this season. But being the Clippers, luck did not strike them very favorably, and they found themselves sitting on the outside looking in after a first-round defeat after the Blazers got back going. And that's what happens when you lose your best two players during a playoff series. And you're not going to be able to do it. And I defy anyone, any team to be. If the Thunder lost Westbrook and Durant, are they getting past the first round? If the Warriors lost, well, they did lose Steph, but say they lost Steph and Draymond, are they getting through? Probably not. If the Spurs lost Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge, are they going anywhere? No. If the Cavs lost LeBron and Kyrie, are they going anywhere? No. And that's just exactly the situation the Clippers were in. And you might say, Chris Paul's not LeBron, or whatever, who cares? They lost their best two players. And I'm arguing with no one here, because maybe everyone agrees with me. But I know that there's people who will be bagging Chris Paul and don't rate him as a top-notch player. But I'm sorry, you're just wrong. Anyway, the Clippers, their draft pick's coming up. They have two draft choices this season, which is a bit of a rarity for them. They're not a team that really covets draft picks all that much, as we saw by the fact that they gave away a first-round pick to get Jeff Green. And not sure how well that decision worked out, but I can almost understand the thought process behind it in trying to just push to get some extra players for this season's push. And you know what? It might have ended up working out if Paul and Griffin hadn't have gone down. They might have had that extra Green coming in as a bench player playing 25 minutes a night. It might have worked out rather than having the 28th pick in a draft moving forward. But now things look just that little bit different because of the way those injuries went down. So we look at their draft picks. They have pick 25 in this upcoming draft. They also have pick 33. So a really high second round draft choice due to a draft pick swap with the Brooklyn Nets. So two picks there, and they're not awesome picks, but the way that this draft is set up, there's not much in terms of star power, but there is a ton of role players. And the Clippers, we know that their bench has struggled for a good couple of seasons. So they need guys that can play as role players. The next problem is Doc Rivers might struggle at picking those guys. And then when he picks them, he might struggle at giving them actual playing time. See Reggie Bullock, see CJ Wilcox, see Cole Aldrich before the end of this season. And guys that he has who are young players with ability and with potential that just don't see the court. So that is obviously something that remains to be seen. But those two picks, they could be turned into something. They could be turned into a ninth man, a tenth man, and really this team, that's really what they need at this point. And that maybe they get a diamond in the rough that becomes a starting small forward or something, but there is something for them to have a look at and maybe get some decent value with those picks. Let's look at the Clippers free agent situation heading into this season or next season. They've got Jeff Green, who I just mentioned they acquired in that deal. He's an unrestricted free agent. He's 29 years of age. He was paid $9.3 million next season. Now, what he's going to get, he will have to get over $10 million a year, you would think, but you wouldn't want to invest more than three seasons in Jeff Green. You wouldn't want to invest more than $12 million in Jeff Green. At this point, it's pretty clear what sort of a player he is. Jamal Crawford, fresh off dubiously winning the Sixth Man of the Year award at 36 years of age as an unrestricted free agent. I'm sure they'd love to bring him back, but we know what Jamal's shortcomings are at this point. We know that he is, in all honesty, probably a negative asset or a negative player on the court a lot of the times. And yes, he did have a couple of high-scoring games, which people love pointing out when I make the argument that he shouldn't have been the Sixth Man of the Year. They love pointing out that he, he carried them to a win or two with a big scoring night. That's fine. He also cost them a few wins with some poor shooting, poor shot selection, poor defense. All those sort of things do add up, and that's why I was pretty much against what he was when he was named the Sixth Man of the Year. They got Luke Marmute, who was their starting small forward, power forward for most of the season. He's an unrestricted free agent. And 39-year-old Pablo Prigioni is an unrestricted free agent as well. And Jeff Ayers is someone who they signed at the end of the season. He is also an unrestricted free agent. They've got Brandon Dawson, who's got a non-guaranteed deal. He's a 23-year-old second-round draft choice. He barely played and faced some domestic assault charges, so that's obviously not a good sign there. And then Cole Aldrich, who had a $1.2 million player option for this season. He has declined that player option. It will feel like the Clippers have no chance of re-signing him. I really rate Cole Aldrich. I rated him last season at the Knicks. I thought it was ridiculous that they didn't play him in New York last season. I thought it was ridiculous that he couldn't find a job where he didn't get paid the minimum this season, and eventually he started to take over, and you could see why I was he joined the cadre of my boys. So that's their free agency situation. We know that they've got the guys like Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin all locked up for next season at $20 million plus per season. They've got JJ Redick locked up too, but the season after that, Paul, Griffin, and Redick can all become free agents. Now, Redick will become a free agent, and Griffin and Paul both have player options to become free agents. So things could really, really change for this team heading into next season, and that's why there's so many calls about blowing up the core and all that sort of stuff. But I'll get this out of the way now. I don't believe in blowing up the core. 53 wins, in much like a Dallas Mavericks sort of situation, just keep yourself in that 50-50 win team. Be a good team, be a very good team, and things might break right for you. And maybe this was the season where things did break right for you until they literally and figuratively broke wrongly when Paul broke his hand. Things were looking great. They were going to get past the first round. They were possibly going to get past the Golden State Warriors. They would possibly have gotten through the conference finals, and they could have taken on the Cleveland Cavaliers or whoever was in the Eastern Conference. That's all a possibility. And I'd say it's a fairly good possibility. If you're a team that wins 30 games, you've got no possibility of doing that. And with 30 teams in the NBA, you go and you tank, you blow it up, whatever. What's the chances that then every pick or decision you make hits? and you become that powerhouse again. You're the third seed in the Western Conference. You're pretty bloody good as it is, or fourth seed or whatever they were. You're pretty bloody good as it is. I would be inclined to try and keep it for one more season unless you just get a ridiculous deal. I wouldn't be saying, let's trade Blake Griffin to the Celtics for pick three. You know, let's pick three and Jay Crowder, whatever. That doesn't work for me as the Clippers. I'm not sure why you do that. I reckon you run it back one more time. And that's what Doc Rivers has said he's going to do, and I completely agree with it. Although, you know, probably 80% of you people listening to this podcast will disagree and think that they need to blow it up. And that's fine as well, but I'm more of the case of, like, you know what, just win games. Let's win some games when we can win some games. And when you're not, it's not, for a team like the Mavericks, for a team like the, not even the Pistons, I can't think of what a good example is. For a team like the Bulls, who could have been an eighth seed, your current core is not winning a championship. There's no real feasible option of them winning a championship with what they've got. So changes need to be made. But the Thunder, the Clippers, the Raptors, there's chances for all these teams. The Spurs. Should the Spurs blow it up because they lost in the second round? No, because you can realistically see them being able to win a championship with what they've got. And a few minor tweaks here and there, it could bring it. So that's why I'm firmly in the camp of let's stick with what we've got with this sort of a situation and go from there. Let's talk players now. We have to start with Chris Paul. How good is Chris Paul? And a lot of you will say, not that good. And I disagree completely. He was sensational yet again. Started off the season slowly, and you saw the torrent of people coming out. What a waste of first-round pick on this bum. Dude's washed. He's finished. Why would I pick him pick seven? Cool. He was the sixth-ranked player in 9-cat leagues. He was the fifth-ranked player in 8-cat leagues. Yes, you know, he dropped down from fourth last season. But who gives a shit, really? That's really tremendous numbers again from Chris Paul. And he did it while having to carry such a huge load with Blake Griffin out. He only played 33 minutes a game, so he was down from the 35 he's played the last two seasons. Almost averaged 20 points a game, which is his highest number in the last four seasons. 1.6 triples, 4.2 rebounds, 9.8 assists, which is down again on the 10 assists he averaged the two previous seasons, but 9.8, not that far off. 2.1 steals, 46-90, and shot 37% from three. These are superb numbers, great assists, great steals, ridiculous field goal percentage for a point guard. Yeah, insane free throw percentage. Doesn't turn the ball over that much, although his turnovers were the highest they've been in the last 6 or 7 years. But still, that's not a massive dint, and you know my take on turnovers. And Chris Paul is still an elite player. He's still very much an elite player. He's still a first-round player. Now, will you have to pick him at pick six next year? Absolutely not. He won't go at pick six because people are waiting for a drop-off. And I can understand that. But he's only 31. I think that he's got at least two more seasons left of being a top-10 player. And then we maybe see him slide down into the top 25, top 35 range. You don't need to pick him at pick six. He'll be available at pick eight. And so will LeBron, most likely. In that pick eight, pick nine mark. Pick 10, maybe. And that's going to be a real steal for you because getting assists is one of the hardest things to get in fantasy leagues. Combine it with 2+ steals and awesome percentages and good scoring and hitting some threes. You know, what more can you ask for? I don't think you can really ask for much more than what Chris Paul provides. He led this team in win shares comfortably at 12.7, a massive 9.2 offensive win shares, huge win shares per 48, massive box score plus minus of 7.8. And for a point guard to post a positive defensive box score plus minus, that's always a positive as well. And yes, it was only 0.5, but still, you only got guys out there, negative twos, negative threes as star point guards. It's a real win. He's a great defensive point guard. He had a usage of 27, but shot 58% true shooting, which is awesome. Had a PER of 26. I don't know what much more I can say about Chris Paul. He will remain a top 10 player next season, and he should remain a top 10 player the year after, but you won't need to pick him in that sixth range. He will be 8-9. You might even get him at 12. And that, in a dynasty league as well, you get him later. He won't be a first-round pick in a dynasty league in a 12-team format. He'll be outside the top 12, I'm pretty sure, because we're all waiting for him to drop off, plus the negative connotations associated with his game, with the losing, and that means people sour on him somewhat. But you'll get a top 7 guy for the next two seasons. And in Dynasty, how hard is it to project more than two seasons ahead? It is really tough. So I'd be happy taking Chris Paul in that sort of situation, grabbing him outside the top 12 in a Dynasty format, and hopefully reaping the benefits. He had a massive on-off of 16.6, and you'll see when we go through the on-offs of this team, The starters just posted massive, massive on-off numbers. The bench, not so much, but just huge numbers from the starters in terms of their on-off numbers. Let's talk Blake Griffin. He had the quad tendon tear, which kept him out for months, basically. Then he had the broken hand issue where he punched the trainer in the face. We know about that, but in the end, that isn't what kept him out. It was the quad tendon that still kept him out, because even when he was ready to return from the hand, it was still the quad that was bothering him. It was still the quad that was bothering him in the playoffs, and it was the quad that ended up keeping him out of the playoffs. So he came back knowing there was risk to re-injure himself and played through it, because they could see the opportunity that was presenting them to really put together a pretty decent season. So Griffin's season, in the end, it's a disappointment, I think it's fair to say. He was the 41st ranked player in 9 cat leagues, 28th last season, 32 in 8 cat, 25 last season. A bit of a drop off, but some of that is weighed down by the fact that he did come back in those last few games of the season, and it was poor, but look, not really, because it wasn't a huge sample size, but he played 39 games and played 33 minutes. He had 21 points a game. He hit 0.2 threes a game, and that's something that he did start to bring into his game, and it's interesting. Now, he's done it in past seasons, and he's shooting them at 40% last year and 35% this season. So that's something that could start to creep into his game a little bit more. 8.4 rebounds, 4.8 assists, 0.8 steals, 0.5 blocks, 49 and 73 is his percentages. The concern there is the field goal percentage. He'd been, his past five seasons, 51, 55, 54, 53, 50, and now 49. So a drop-off in his field goal percentage. He's taking more mid-range shots. His athleticism is leaving him a little bit, and he was a guy that was huge in terms of his athleticism. And the injuries are definitely piling up with Griffin, and that is a concern whether he ever returns to that guy who can be such a high flyer and can be that guy who finishes at 53, 54%. Can he be that player? Yes, he still scored 21 points, 8.5 rebounds, 5 assists. And the assists are something that's continually growing with him. He's turning that into a second part of his game. But he's never going to be a defensive presence. He doesn't block shots. He's not a guy who really thrives at getting steals. Although he's not terrible at it. 0.8 steals is not bad, but he's a scorer. And he's not going to be a double-digit rebounder anymore. And we've seen that his first two seasons, he got double-digit rebounds. Since then, 8.3, 9.5, 7.6, 8.4. Still good numbers, but not massively good, not great. And that does take away some of his fantasy value. But I think if you expect him to be the 32nd ranked player next season, I think that's too low. I think he'll be better than that. I think he's a top 25 guy. I'm pretty confident he's a top 25 player next season. And I think you might be able to get him at a bit of a discount, an injury-based discount. Do you look at him and go, I think he's going to get injured again? Well, you have to have some concern. But the thing I look at with Griffin is all his injuries are different. They're not the same thing continually happening. And that's where you have the concern. Derrick Rose's knee, that's a bother. Blake Griffin has a hand problem, has an elbow problem, has a thigh problem, has a knee problem. And yes, it's like, why does everything keep getting injured? Maybe it's just a shit ton of bad luck. Who knows? But it's not like, oh my God, his thigh is injured. Oh my God, his thigh is injured. Jesus, his thigh again. Oh, his thigh. Like, it's not the same thing. So to me, that puts a little bit more confidence in my mind that, with a long off season to recover here, everything should be ready to go. And yes, maybe he does cop another fluke injury. But we look at him in terms of being injury prone. 39 games this year, 67 the year before. But the two previous, he played 80 games. He played 66 the one before that and 82 the one before that. So he's had a couple of bad years, but also a couple of really strong years. So it doesn't really bother me. And I think taking him in the third round will be a real bargain. Like a 20-point scorer who gets you 5 assists, 8 rebounds, and good percentages, and has the ability to potentially flash 0.4 threes a game. I think he can get to that. I think that he's a player who will be a little bit underrated heading into next season. Now, his win shares per 48 were pretty good. They weren't anywhere near as good as Jordan or Paul or even Cole Aldrich. He was fourth on the team in that metric, but still posted a pretty decent box score plus minus at fourth on the team in that. Had a 22 PER. A true shooting of just 54, which is something, again, I talked about his field goal percentage. He does need to work on that and bring it up and get his rebounding back. But the fact that he was the second leading assist man on this team, getting assists on 27% of his offensive possessions, is a huge number while having a usage of almost 30%. Big numbers. He's great in terms of turnovers as well. We know Chris Paul's great in terms of turnovers, but Blake Griffin, he averaged 2.4 turnovers and 4.8 assists. So a 2-to-1 turnover ratio is incredibly good for a guy that's passing the ball that much and is not a point guard, and his ability to handle the ball is really terrific. So I do think that Blake bounces back and we see him not at that 38 or 40 ranking, but more inside that 24-25 sort of mark. Next up, DeAndre Jordan. I really like DeAndre Jordan, but when you look at his rank, actually back to Blake, he had a 3.9 on-off, so not a big on-off number there, but when you get to these next couple of guys, we'll see what I mean by this core carrying them. DeAndre Jordan's on-off was 13.7, so that's a huge number. 9-cat leagues, he was the 71st ranked player. 8-cats, he was 70th, but that means shit, because his free throw percentage is so poor that it drops all of his other numbers down. And you're either picking DeAndre Jordan early, or you're not picking him at all. You're not thinking that, oh, he's the 70th best player, because that's just not how it works. So let's move to my punting rankings. In a 9-2 setting, he was 7th. I'd say that's pretty good. In an 8-2, he was 13th. Now, you don't have to pick him 7th. You probably don't have to pick him 13th. You can get him in the 20s. But if you're subscribing to a theory where you're punting free throws, and you pick him at 25 or 26 or 20 or whatever, you get pretty good value out of it. And that's exactly the benefit of punting, that you get a guy that's honestly locking down almost three categories for you straight off the bat in rebounds, blocks, and field goal percentage, just locking those down. If you're playing with the offensive rebounds, he locks that down as well. That's the benefit, because you get value by taking someone in the third or fourth round who really is a first round type of value player. He got himself onto the first team All-NBA team, which I think was wrong, but he did have a really good season, and he is still underrated in terms of what he can do. But 12.7 points, 13.9 rebounds, he got 1.2 assists, 0.7 steals, 2.3 blocks, and shot 70% from the field, and shot 43% from the line. And just another reminder, if you have DeAndre Jordan, you cannot compete in free throw percentage. Cannot. His Z-score for that category is -5.91, meaning you need like 3 James Hardens to break even. You cannot win that category. So don't think I'm going to pair Jordan and Harden and compete in free throws, because you won't. Now, you can pair Jordan and Harden, fine, because you're going to get big rebounds, big assists, big scoring, big steals, big blocks, big field goal percentage, yes, but you won't win free throws. And that's probably wasting Harden's ability to shoot free throws because of how good he is, and that's his main strength of a category. But pairing DeAndre Jordan with Steph Curry, who, yes, shoots a high percentage, but on very few attempts, it's not one of Steph's biggest strengths. That's a great pairing. So don't think that you can overcome his free throw percentage. You can't. You can maybe bring it back to just below average. But what's the point in that? There's none. Don't try to do it. It just, hey, look, maybe you did it. Maybe you somehow had him and won and finished second in your Roto League in free throws. I'd be stunned, but I'd like to see your team if you did it. Anyway, DeAndre Jordan, really good advanced numbers as well. Just behind Chris Paul in the win shares at 11.5. Great win shares per 48. Pretty solid box score plus minus, coming in third on the team there. And in terms of his defensive box score plus minus, so there was... He was second on the team, because I'll talk about my boy later, but Cole Aldrich had some monster numbers. But Jordan posted a PER of over 20, a true shooting of 63, really put up some impressive numbers, and you know, rightfully so, saw him get some recognition. Not in the first team, that's not right, and I think he probably should have been considered for an all-star berth, but still, it's good to see him getting some sort of recognition for having a really impressive season and keeping this team afloat when they lost Griffin, and assuming the mantle of second best player on the team when Griffin was out, and putting together really a really impressive sort of campaign. JJ Redick, he had an on-off of 14.7. So Redick at 14.7, Jordan at 13.7, and Paul at 16.6. These are huge on-off numbers. Redick was superb this season. He was 69th in 9-cat leagues. He was 91st in 8-cat leagues. Pretty similar to what he was the year before. And whenever Blake Griffin sits, he gets a bump. He takes more shots, he becomes more engaged, and that's fine because he moves up from being the third offensive option to being the second offensive option, and he's really good at what he does. He played only 28 minutes a game this season, which is a little bit disappointing. You would prefer, if he was up at 30, then he's a guy that's challenging for a top 70, top 60 sort of position. 16 points and 2.6 triples, He hit 1 point. Oh, he had 1.9 rebounds, 1.4 assists, half a steal. But the real value of Redick comes in the fact that he was a 48% shooter. He shot 89% from the line, and he shot 47% from three. So if you're counting three-point percentage, he's one of the best guys out there. His value is points, it's threes, it's field goal percentage, it's free throw percentage, and you know, low turnovers or chucking three-point percentage, which three-point percentage is an underrated category for leagues, and it's something I'm going to investigate as we head into next season in terms of nine-cat leagues. Whether you do nine-cat leagues, instead of having turnovers, having one category is three-point percentage, having one category is two-point percentage. It's because if you have field goal percentage and three-point percentage, that means that three-point percentage gets counted twice. But if you split it into two-point and three-point percentage, I think it's a nice way of doing it. And three-point percentage is something that doesn't necessarily favor small guys. It favors some. It also hinders some. It doesn't necessarily favor big guys. It helps some. It hinders some. And some, it's completely neutral. So I think that three-point percentage is a really interesting category to consider for nine-category leagues instead of turnovers. Just something I'm throwing out there randomly. But Redick was really good again this season. And people talk about Buddy Hield as a draft prospect. I think that Hield can become Redick. I think that's the way that he can look in the league. And that's still a really productive player. And Redick is a super underrated player, a really good defender. And Hield is not that defender at this point. But Redick is just a tremendous shooter, a tremendous scorer. And that's what Hield can become 5, 6, 7 years into his career, I think. Redick, you would imagine, just remains that sort of player who's a decent later round pick, you're going to get no issue with your percentages, you're going to score, and you're going to hit threes. And that can be valuable because sometimes the players who might hit you 2 threes a game do it on 39% shooting. He's doing it on 48% shooting, and not only not hurting your field goal percentage, but actively helping it. And that can be really valuable, and that's something you need to pay attention to when drafting. In terms of win shares, he was second on this team, not a surprise. Win shares per 48, he was fifth. Good numbers. Defensively, his defensive box score plus minus didn't show up well at a -2.7. But for any of you who played DFS, you knew playing a shooting guard against the Clippers was death because they were the best team at defending shooting guards for the majority of the season. And a lot of that comes to the way that Paul defended and Jordan defended, but it was also the play of Redick. So he was still pretty impressive on that end, even though those defensive box score plus minus numbers don't necessarily add up. But when he posts a true shooting of 63, that is an awesome number for a shooting guard. He posted a 17.5 PER. In terms of his age, he's older. He's 31, but I don't see why he can't continue this for 2 or 3 years in a Kyle Korver sort of mold. If you're hitting 48% of your threes, you can do it to age 33, 34. When you hit to 35, 36, maybe it becomes a problem. And this is assuming no major injuries in that time frame. But Redick should continue to be that guy. He's not based on getting athletic rebounds or getting steals or dishing the ball or crazy dribble moves. He scores, he's efficient at it, from the three-point line, from inside the arc, at getting to the line. He does all that sort of stuff. And I don't see much of that changing in the next 2 to 3 seasons. Now it's time for me to talk about my boy. I should have a Cole Aldrich jersey hanging up here. Maybe I'll get one for whatever team he goes to next season. But Cole Aldrich has been my boy for a couple of seasons, and he was tremendous yet again this year. He did post a -5.1 on off, and that's partly due to the fact that he was playing with a bench unit that was pretty piss poor. But to play as few minutes as what Aldrich did and still be the 144th ranked player in 9-cat leagues and 159th in 8-cat leagues is really, really impressive to me. I thought that he was tremendous this season. In terms of, even if you look at in a punting situation, an 8-2, he was 123rd. Post-All-Star in NICAT, 85. Post-All-Star in 8-cat, 96. But the real impressive thing to me, per 36, if we look at everyone on a per 36 basis, he was the 9th ranked player in 9-cat leagues and 7th in 8-cat leagues. He barely played. He played 13 minutes a game. 13 minutes. And 13 minutes, and in an 8-2, he was ranked 123rd in 13 minutes. He averaged only 5.3 points, but he got you 4.8 rebounds in those 13 minutes. He got you 0.8 steals. He got you 1.1 blocks. He shot you 60%, and he shot you 70% from the free throw line. When DeAndre Jordan had to miss time, Aldrich was a beast. We saw that, and he was an absolute must-play in DFS for most of that time. Heck, for most of the time at the end of the season, when he was getting 20 minutes a night, when they finally decided, you know, we're not running Josh Smith out there as a starting center, we're just going to put Aldrich out there and play him some decent minutes, he was a guy that you could use in pretty much all standard 12-team leagues. He's going to get paid a fair chunk of money, and he's probably not a starting center, but on a poor team, I wouldn't have any problem giving him 30 minutes. He should have started for the Knicks last season. I said that millions of times. He should have started. And when he did start a couple of games, I thought he was really good. And when he started here in Los Angeles, he was fantastic as well. He can be a really great contributor who is just superb defensively, but is not terrible offensively. If you look at what his per 36 numbers are for this season, and these are numbers that, you know, put him 6th in the league, or whatever it was, 7th, 14.4 points, 13 rebounds, 2 assists, 2.2 steals, 2.9 blocks, and 60% shooting. Just positives all over the court for what Cole Aldrich was able to do. We look at his advanced numbers. He finished 3rd on the team in win shares per 48. 3rd, ahead of Blake, ahead of Redick, just behind Jordan and Paul. Defensive box score plus minus, easily the best on the team at 5.8. The next was DeAndre Jordan at 3.8. His box score plus minus was 2nd on the team, behind Chris Paul at 4.8. Yes, his offensive box score plus minus was a negative 1, but that's not a terrible number. He had a PR of 21.3. He had a true shooting of 63%. He had a below average usage at 18. Huge rebound percentage, massive block percentage. Again, 6.7%, higher than what DeAndre Jordan. I can't stress enough how good Cole Aldrich is. Now, whether he can run it for 30 minutes and whether a team wants to do that, probably not. But as a Bulls fan, I would have no issue with the Bulls saying, you know, Pau Gasol's going, Joakim Noah wants to go somewhere else. We want to pay Cole Aldrich $12 million a year for 3 years, and he'll be our starting center. He'll play next to Nikola Mirotic, and he'll be our rim protector. I would say, yep, fine. You play your 28 minutes a game. You can get Cristiano Felizio in there. Play Porter some small ball 4-5 as well. I don't have a problem with it, because I do think that he is a really underrated player. He's 27 years of age. It puts him through to 30. Look, he's not going to be an all-star, but he can be a bloody good fantasy player. And if he goes to a situation where he's in a spot where he starts, then I would pick him. I would pick him inside the top 100. If he's getting 27 minutes a night, I'm picking him, because he's efficient, super efficient field goal percentage, good free throw percentage, big rebounds, big blocks, big steals, decent scoring. I don't know what more you can ask for Cole Aldrich. If no one believes in him, and it's a bit of a risk at this point given we don't know where he's sitting, I'd be trying to acquire him in dynasty leagues. I wouldn't be paying a top 100 price for him. I probably wouldn't be paying a top 150 price for him. But I'd be trying to, because it could work out significantly in your favor. Maybe I'm just ridiculously high on Cole Aldrich. Let me know if I am, but I do really think that, and I've thought it for quite a few seasons, that he can be a guy that is not an impact player, is not a superstar, but he's impactful enough. Jamal Crawford. I'm not sure of the impact Jamal Crawford has. He was a negative 6.2 on off numbers. He finished 170th in 9-cat and 166th in 8-cat. And with Blake Griffin out, yes, he did see improved numbers. He was 129th post-All-Star. Yep, he was okay. But he wasn't the sixth man of the year, I'll give you that. He wasn't as good off the bench for this team as what Aldrich was. Aldrich was a better sixth man on this team than what Crawford was. But yes, he played 27 minutes a night, and he averaged 14.4 points. He hit 1.4 triples, but he doesn't... 1.9 rebounds in 27 minutes is a terrible number. 2.3 assists is not ideal as a guy who does play or handles the ball quite a bit as well. We've seen all his dribble moves. 0.7 steals, 0.1 blocks, 40 and 90 is his percentages, and shot 33% from three. So not only is he's a 40% shooter from the field, but he's a below average three-point shooter. And yes, the 90% is great from the line, but only 3.5 attempts. It's not really swinging a huge amount. In fact, if you look at his fantasy value, that's his biggest contribution, his free throw percentage, followed by his three-pointers. And his scoring is right on average. And that's the thing you've got to pay attention to in fantasy, is 14.4 points is basically the average amount of scoring. So it's not like, well, that's a great number. It's exactly average. Now, Crawford did have some big games, no doubt, but he saw a drop-off in his scoring. He saw a drop-off in his three-pointers. He saw a drop-off in his assists and his steals. He shot the same percentage, but he wasn't good last year either, really. 33% from three the last 2 years, that does not make a good shooter. Where does he sit next season? I wouldn't be drafting him in standard leagues, definitely not in 10-team leagues. In 12-team leagues, probably not. The guy's going to be 36, 37 years old. He provides nothing apart from threes and free throw percentage, really, and that'll probably decrease. If we look at his advanced numbers, they're not all that pretty. Jamal Crawford was a negative 2.6 in defensive box score plus minus. He was a negative 2.4 defensively. We know he's an atrocious defender. He was also a negative offensively because he takes bad shots. He has bad shot selection, and then he doesn't hit them. And he's very much in the form of Kobe Bryant in terms of people love looking at him. Wow, but look at him. He dropped 35 points in one game. Nah, he saved the team. He scored 35. Cool, but he probably took 15 unadvisable shots or inadvisable shots in that game. He probably gave up 40 points going the other way. But you see a big contribution in the scoring column, and it's all thumbs up for Jamal Crawford. But overall, he's losing you games. He was a below average in PER. His win shares per 48 was below average. It was actually 11th on the team. His total win shares at 3.3, that's not a terrible number, but he did play quite a few games, but it placed him 6th on the team behind Aldridge, behind Griffin, Reddick, Jordan, and Paul. And that's sort of where he should be sitting in the scheme of things. Nothing really great about what he did. You know, a 53% true shooting on 25 usage is not a good use of those 25% of possessions, not being able to hit them at an average rate. And I don't believe that Crawford should be someone you're entertaining in 12-team leagues next year. If you've got him in a dynasty league, I'd be trying to ship him out, because I think that at that age, obviously, how long has he got left? And the decline should continue, much like we saw it with Bryant. Speaking of declines continuing, Jeff Green came across from the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, he had some pretty decent games in Memphis when the injuries hit, when Gasol was out, when Zach Randolph was out. But overall, who is he? He's not good. He was 169th in 9-cat leagues and 174th in 8-cat, but once he joined Los Angeles, he went from 151 to 210, and that's without Blake Griffin playing. So he had an opportunity to come in and be a starting power forward, but Doc Rivers, who loved him from his time in Boston, couldn't trust him enough to play him enough minutes to really have as big enough impact to be out there and say, well, you're playing 30 minutes or not. That didn't happen. They were giving minutes to Wes Johnson, which is fine because I like Wes Johnson. Yeah, Luke Marmute was playing minutes over him. Lots of different things that were sort of working against him being a good fantasy player, because in the end he's not a player who, now we don't know where he's going to go, but someone will probably overpay for him, and I really look forward to seeing who that's going to be. But he averaged 10.9 points in Los Angeles last season and only got 26 minutes, and again, this is without Blake Griffin. He doesn't get 0.8 blocks, 0.7 steals, 1.5 assists, 3.4 rebounds. These are not good numbers. 33 from 3, 43 from the field, 62 from the free throw line. Like, what about that? Any of that is good? None of it. He might go to a team and they go, oh, look, Jeff Green's going to be our starter and play 30 minutes. And don't get sucked in. It's not something where I think that he can change anything about what he does. He'll have some games that are good, no doubt. He'll have some stretches of games that are good, no doubt. But will it last? Probably not. To me, he's definitely on the way down. He's more of a 16-team league player at this point in his career, I would say. And even then, the upside is clearly not there. Not a Jeff Green fan, as you can... I have been in the past, though. I've thought he had opportunities to put up good numbers, but not so much anymore. A below-average win shares, negative box score plus-minus offensively, and that's supposedly where he provides his best value. Still provided a positive number defensively, but a 12 PER, a true shooting of less than 50, and still use 20% of the possessions as well. So nothing superb about Jeff Green. He is 29 years of age, so he's older than you probably think as well. So where does he go from here? And the only answer I can give you to that is really down. If you couldn't find himself 30 minutes on a team without Blake Griffin, and was just gagging for someone to play the power forward spot, and your other opposition was Luke Marmute, then I'm not sure where Jeff Green goes from here. Wes Johnson is a player that I do really like, and he is a real decent fantasy contributor. Now, he is a player who's declined his player option for next season, so he will be a free agent. He was the 159th ranked player in 9-cat leagues and 185 in 8-cat leagues, but what he can do, if he's given enough minutes, he can be a triple one player. We've seen that when he was back playing for Mike D'Antoni in the Lakers. Maybe he heads to Houston and becomes their starting power forward. Then he would be very interesting, because he's better off playing as the four than playing as the three, playing as a small ball four. I think that's definitely where his value lies. Now, playing this season in Los Angeles, he averaged 20 minutes a game and only 6.6 points, but he still got 1.2 triples, he still had 3 rebounds, he still got a steal, and still had 0.7 blocks. And they're really good numbers in 20 minutes. And obviously, in 30 minutes, it's comfortably a triple one. 40% shooter is a down part of his game, though. That's obviously not great. 67 from the line and 33 from three. So the shooting is something that is a bother for him. But I think as he plays as a power forward, that should be able to increase those numbers a little bit more. And he couldn't do that a huge amount in Los Angeles because they were playing Jeff Green there and obviously Blake Griffin there to start the season. But he's someone to definitely watch as the season progresses. And if he heads, or not, as the free agency works its way out, depending on where he goes, then he becomes a player who you might have sneaky value. if he's playing the four and they're looking to give him 25 minutes a night, then 14-team leagues absolutely need to take notice. And even 12-team leagues, he's a great source of those hard-to-come-by stats, and you get all three of those in one player. There's just not many guys that do it. So he's a player that I am interested in. I am really intrigued to see where he ends up. His advanced numbers were okay, and a really solid 1.8 defensive box score plus minus. He was a positive overall in box score plus minus, and that put him ahead of guys like Jeff Green, like Jamal Crawford. You know, more valuable, and I would say that's fair enough, because what he does defensively, you know, towers above what those other guys can do, and you know, that's exactly what he is. True shooting percentage is not good at 51, but again, still better than Jamal Crawford's. But he's not a high usage guy. You see just 16% of percentages, so it doesn't hurt you as much as say what Crawford can do. So I think Johnson had a relatively successful season. He's not going to get the contract that Jeff Green gets. He's probably not going to get the same contract that Crawford gets. But I think overall he could end up being the more useful player out of that trio of guys, no matter where they end up. And yeah, if he goes back to the Clippers and is on a 20-minute roll, then you leave him for those 16 to 18 team leagues and stream him in when necessary to get some defensive stats. But land him in Houston, and D'Antoni's going to play him 27 minutes as a stretch four, I'm okay with grabbing him in the last round, because I think that those triple one stats are just so hard to come by. Austin Rivers. It's really fun to bash on Austin Rivers for a lot of people. Not me, but I think that we all gained more respect for him for the way that he played this season, and not just the playoff game, because he was really good, but any time, and this happened last season as well, any time when he had to play minutes for Chris Paul, he produced. And maybe we get more respect from him from a fantasy point of view, because he put up fantastic numbers. He was a must-play DFS guy when he got the opportunity, and really put up some big numbers. Now, a negative 13.2 on-off is pretty piss poor. 271 in 9 cats, not ideal. 255 in 8 cat is also not ideal. But still, what Austin Rivers was able to do, I think was pretty good. 9 points, 0.9 threes, 2 rebounds, 1.6 assists, and 0.7 steals, and he shot 44%. That's not terrible as a guy who's been noted as a poor shooter. Now, he needs to work on his 3, just shooting 33% there, and 68 from the line is a concern too, and that gives concern as to whether he ever can become a decent 3-point shooter. But he found a way to score, he hit some 3s, and he was pretty aggressive, and did some decent stuff on defense. And I think that Austin Rivers would have to be pretty proud of what he did. He took his numbers up in scoring, in 3-point shooting, shot a better field goal percentage, better free throw percentage, and better 3-point percentage. And that's really all you can ask for a player. Now, Rivers, like Wes Johnson, has also declined his player option. Whether he returns to Los Angeles, you would have to think that he would, because who else is the backup point guard on this team, and what other options do they have to bring in other backup point guards? But Rivers is a guy that, you know, the 271 ranking's not flattering, but I think that he can find himself potentially becoming a top 200 player next season. I wouldn't put that past him. I think that he can be that guy. I think that he's learnt a lot, and he has improved a lot throughout his time in the league. Not good advanced numbers, negatives in both offensive and defensive box score, plus minus, below average PER, poor true shooting, poor win shares, but I think that he gained a lot more respect, and I think that he shouldn't be treated as a joke. And if Paul goes down, then you absolutely grab Austin Rivers in every situation, because in DFS he's going to produce, and then in seasonal leagues he's going to put up numbers. It's just what's going to happen with him, and we've seen it now over two seasons that when he gets put into the starting lineup, the play might not be awesome. That's fine. It might not be, well, look at Austin Rivers, he should be an all-star, but it's solid, and the fantasy stats are definitely there for him. And that's, you know, in the end, that's really what we're talking about here, is trying to work out who's going to get fantasy stats when they get the opportunity. And Rivers is one of those guys who can do that, and we have seen do that. I just want to bring up his splits and see what he does when he gets minutes. That's always an interesting thing. And you can check all this stuff out on Basketball Reference as well. Let's have a look. In the games where he played between 30 and 39 minutes, he averaged 15.6 points, 2.4 rebounds, 2.8 assists. He shot 44% from three in those games, again, with better players around him, 44% from the field, true shooting of 51, and took a bigger usage of 21 as well, and had himself some, you know, a steal a game, some pretty decent numbers. In 34 minutes in those five games, 15.6, 2.4, 2.8, they're not bad numbers. And I think it's... I think he's someone to watch. I think he'll be back with Los Angeles, and he becomes an automatic add if Chris Paul goes down. Paul Pierce. We don't know if Paul Pierce is going to be back next season. He could very well retire. He struggled a lot. He's 38 years old. He has got one more year left on his deal. It was a pretty weird deal to sign him to three seasons last year because he was going to be 40. And yes, we saw some pretty decent play from him in Washington, but he dropped off considerably. He was the 305th ranked player in 9-cat leagues, 310th in 8-cat leagues, and that's a drop from 114th last season. So a huge drop off from Pierce. He only played 17.6 minutes a game. He was unplayable in a lot of situations. He had to rest. He averaged 5.8 points and 1-3, 2.6 rebounds, and shot 36 and 79, including just 31% from 3. It's safe to say that Paul Pierce is not a fantasy option in any real situation. Maybe a 30-team league. If it's not a dynasty, you consider him. But apart from that, like what? Yes, he's been a legend of the game. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. But there's nothing that makes you think, oh, Paul Pierce is a guy I need to get my hand on for fantasy. An 8.2 PER, yeah, terrible box score plus minuses, terrible win shares per 48. Nothing is appealing. Speaking of nothing appealing, Pablo Prigioni was a negative 10.4 on court. He ranked just outside the top 300 in both 9 and 8 cat leagues, and he's 39 years old. He's older than Paul Pierce. What is he going to do? At 13 minutes a game, he averaged 2.3 points and 2.1 assists and 0.8 steals. Now, when he gets a starting opportunity, you're going to get assists, you're going to get threes, and you're going to get steals, and that's a given. But at 39 years of age, his body obviously can't hold onto a starting role, and he's not good enough to hold onto a starting role. It's just going to be a spot start situation, and even then, it's going to go to Rivers. He's going to be a third point guard. He won't find himself inside the top 300 next season. I'm pretty confident with that. He might not even find himself in the NBA. He might, yeah, at that age, he might not find himself playing. He's an unrestricted free agent. Maybe he goes back to Europe. I don't think there's a huge amount to be really gained by really dealing a huge amount with Pablo Prigioni for the season. No, that's fair enough. Luke Mamute started basically all of the season for this team. Fair to say he's not really a fantasy darling. He played 75 games and started 61 of them. Didn't do much with him. 357th in 9-cat leagues, 363 in 8-cat. Now, he was the starter for the Philadelphia 76ers last season, and they said, you know what, Luke, you're probably not the right player for us. But Doc Rivers went, nah, Luke, come across, we'll start you all season. It was an odd decision. Yes, he provides really good defense, but statistically, he does nothing. He played 17 minutes a night for 3 points, 2.3 rebounds, and 0.6 steals, shooting 46% and 33% from three. His advanced numbers, yeah, defensively, good, 1.5, but he's such an offensive negative. He's a negative 3. It gives him an overall negative value. He's a negative in win shares. He had a PER of 7.3. He's a poor shooter. Yes, his defense is good, but the 17 minutes that he's out there, the team, he struggles because he's a zero on offense. Now, he played with those starters a lot, so his on-off of 7.8 looks really good. And some of that's him providing defense. But you've got to be able to do something on the other end, and he is just someone that's completely ignored. Fantasy-wise, I think it's fair to say that we don't have much of a hope for Mamute moving forward. A player we should have some hope for is CJ Wilcox. He had a nice 3.2 on-off, and that's great because a lot of the bench guys were negatives. Now, he didn't play much, but I thought that he improved. He went from 444th in 9-cat as a rookie to 382, and it's not a big jump, but it's enough to make me think, okay, 120th in 9-cat per 36, and that's another thing where I start to go, okay, maybe we're seeing some CJ Wilcox here. He started to actually get playing time, which is something that Doc Rivers refused to do for big chunks of the season. I personally would rather them get him out there than Jeff Green or Jamal Crawford and actually see how he can build something for the future. I think that he can be a decent player. He shot 39% from three. That's a really, really good number, obviously. He only scored 2.8 points a game, but he did it in 7 minutes. Yeah, times four gets you to 28 minutes a night. And he's scoring 12 points. 12 points in 28 minutes, I don't think that's terrible. And that's where his per 36 rankings come in. 14.5 points, 1.9 triples, 2.7 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 2.1 steals. Good numbers. He's got to work on a few things on his game, but he's a decent free throw shooter. He's a good 3-point shooter. He's got a lot to work on, clearly. But I think that going from 444 to 382, we could see him push to 320 or inside the top 300 next season if they start to give him more minutes. And I really think that they should, because who else have they got to build on this team? When I did my player comps for CJ Wilcox, the top three guys that came out, the first one was Lucius Harris, the second one was Mike Woodson, And the third one was CJ McCollum. And obviously the McCollum one is an interesting one because he, this is McCollum, it compares, you know, season. So it's CJ Wilcox's 2016 compares favorably to CJ McCollum's 2015, both of their second seasons. And we saw what McCollum did in his third season. Tremendous. Now, Wilcox isn't going to have, that sort of impact next season. It's just not going to happen. But he's also, you know, similar to CJ Watson, who's been a decent NBA player. There's a few guys on this list where I look at it and go, all right, I think there's something about CJ Wilcox. We saw Reggie Bullock leave the Clippers and start to put up some decent numbers in Detroit. Eventually, Doc's going to have to start trusting him, and he did trust him a little bit more last season. So I do think that Wilcox, if you're ready to you've got to be deep, and you've got to be thinking, I'm acquiring a player who might have top 220 upside, and it might happen in 2 years' time, but you could get him for a zero. In a 400 deep league, you might just be able to find him. You might be able to get him for nothing. And I think that he could be useful. For a guy that was as poor as what we might think he was, his win shares per 48 were only just under average. His box score plus minus was a negative 2.4. Better than Jamal Crawford, better than Paul Pierce. A PER of 12.9. Again, better than Pierce. Better than Jeff Green. Better than Lance Stevenson when he played on this team. Better than Marmute. Better than Pablo Prigioni. Better than Wes Johnson. There's a fair bit to like about CJ Wilcox. He's not going to ever be a top 50 player. He might have one top 100 season in his career. That's not a big stretch. But I think that he's a guy that year four, year five, we really might see him start to take, not take over, but really start to make a somewhat of a name for himself. And now is a time to really have a look at him and seeing if you can acquire him. But because there are some players I look at and go, I don't think this guy is anything. But I think Wilcox showed enough and is underused in Los Angeles. And we know that that's Doc Rivers' proclivity is not to use these young players. I think that he's someone that you can sneak and maybe get yourself a bit of a bargain. It's a long shot. No doubt it's a long shot. But it might pay off. Brandon Dawson was we've got Jeff Ayers here. We don't need to talk about Jeff Ayers. Jeff Ayers was signed for the rest of the season. He likely won't be back. Brandon Dawson, I thought he was going to be an okay player. He played 5 minutes a game in six games. We don't know really anything about Brandon Dawson at this point. He looked okay in summer league. He's a bigger sort of body player. Not a terrible guy to look at for the future, but nothing he did this year really should, you know, give us hope for the future or anything along those lines. None of his advanced numbers are great because the sample size is all pretty small as well. If I'm grabbing a young player off this team, it's Wilcox and it's not Dawson. But we might see something extra from Dawson this season, especially if Aldridge leaves. He just moves into that big man pecking order, just up a one step. But that's assuming that they keep him around because he has got a non-guaranteed deal for next season. I would hope that they would. And I do think that he can provide something, provide some rebounding ability for this team, maybe a little bit of defense. If he works on his game, his defense was streets ahead of what he was able to do offensively. But we didn't see anything really to gain much from Dawson, but he's not someone that I'm completely writing off just yet. All right, it is time now for a quick break in the show, and then I'm going to be back to answer your questions regarding the Los Angeles Clippers.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come and now, me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
Live, I'm not sure, but he says, Fred's at Texan Invasion. He says, how do you maintain that luscious beard? Not Clippers related, but I'll still answer it. How do I maintain it? I literally, Fred, I do jack shit. I do nothing. I don't put oil in it. I don't comb it. I get it trimmed once a month. I do nothing else. I'm just naturally a hairy bastard, and it just grows. That's it. I do nothing. And not everyone can be blessed with as much hairiness as I've got. It just happens. Maybe I'm looking to invest in a beard oil. If anyone listens to this podcast and uses a beard oil, let me know. My hairdresser is trying to get me one that he reckons it might be worth looking at. Let me know if you use a beard oil and which one you use and why it's good. But how do I maintain it? I literally do nothing. And that's basically how the beard started, because I could not be stuffed shaving it every day. So I didn't. And here we are, all hairy and bearded and shit. All right, let's talk Clippers again. Some really good questions came through here. Nathan Ritchie says, do you think Doc Rivers is successfully filling the roles of both coach and GM? I'll give you a quick answer. No. We saw glimpses of Blake Griffin hitting threes this season. Will he develop a three-point shot in the future? Yeah, I think he will. I think that he's obviously taken his game, and he's developed his game tremendously throughout his career, Griffin. The ball handling, the passing, the shooting. When previously he was a dunk and lob and catch guy, now he can hit those outside shots. And yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be a player who hits 1 3 a game like Boogie Cousins or Al Horford, although that might come. But half a three, 0.6 threes a game is definitely possible for Griffin. If you're hitting him at 35%, maintained at that rate, I think that's absolutely fine. And yes, I do think he can do it. Is Doc Rivers successfully filling the role of coach and GM? He's had a lot of mistakes. The Cole Aldrich signing was brilliant, but he also then didn't know how to use Cole Aldrich for half of the season. Paul Pierce didn't work out. Jeff Green didn't work out. Who else is there? Josh Smith didn't work out. Lance Stevenson didn't work out. A lot of the moves that he made just were terrible. Is it in the team's best interest to keep the core three guys together or go in a different direction? I spoke about that at the start, Nathan. I think keep them together. John Murphy says, Blake has seen his field goal percentage drop steadily in the last few seasons. Do you think we will ever see it at 52-plus again? No, I don't. I think that some of that is to do with athleticism and having to take his game out to the perimeter, because he doesn't want to bang in low. He doesn't have quite the same athleticism to jump and grab rebounds and do putbacks like he used to. He's still plenty athletic, but he's just not that same freak that he was. And the injuries have taken a toll on him. So, no, it might get back to 50. 52, 53 is a stretch. And I think 47 is probably as low as we'll ever see it. Where do you think he bottoms out? Oh, there you go. 47. Last question is a really good one. I like this question. Do you think CP3 will likely return top 15 value next year in a 12-team, 9-category head-to-head league? Absolutely, I do. No doubt in my mind. I own him in a dynasty league with that format, and I'm trying to determine whether he's worth keeping for $50 of a $220 budget. There'll be a few big names available in the free agent auction as well, such as LeBron and Harden, both of which will go for $70 to $75, given how this league's auctions have gone in the past. Well, that's different. Yes, I think he'll be a top 15 player next season. $50 on the surface is a bargain, but you're talking dynasty. If James Harden and LeBron James are going for $70 each, A, there's a problem with your league that is valuing LeBron and Harden the same. Because that's a real issue, because Harden is significantly better than LeBron, and Paul is significantly better than LeBron as well, I think. But for an extra $20, $70 for James Harden in a dynasty league is absolutely where you should be going. Now, $50 for Chris Paul is fine, but if you are confident you can get James Harden for $70 to $75, smash it. I think you have to do it, because Paul will be this guy that's worth $50 for two seasons. Harden will be worth $80 for four seasons. To me, it's a no-brainer. I think you absolutely have to. Now, it depends, because what if everyone else goes out there and spends $100 on Harden, and then you're stuffed? So how do you look at risk assessment? I've got Paul for $50. I can hang on to him. I've got what I've got here. Or do I take a step forward and try and really push my team forward and get Harden for $70 and then become a powerhouse? Because the difference between Harden and Paul is significant to me. It's a pretty big difference, and that cost is not enough to offset it. Plus, he lasts longer. Now, I don't know about your inflation rules and how long you can keep guys, but if there's no inflation, you can keep them long term. Harden at $70 is a bargain. All right, that's the way I reckon you should be looking, Drew. We are done today, guys. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Don't forget to check out Fantrax. Don't forget to check out Basketball Monster. And don't forget to check out Hardwood Paroxysm, all those great places where I'm associated with. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or anywhere where you find good podcasts. And any subscription that you do really helps the show. Download every episode, even if you don't listen to them. Just download them and give a review would be awesome too. If you're on YouTube, give it a thumbs up, give a comment, share it with your friends, get the podcast out to people, as many people as you can. It really helps me improve the quality of this show. And with the way that you guys have been helping, I'm looking at bringing a few new offerings into the mix over the next couple of months and looking to expand the podcast out to do some fantasy baseball and some fantasy football as well. So just looking at that at the moment, but looking to do some new podcasts that will be coming into the Red Rock family. So that's all to do with the help that you've given the podcast, and supporting sponsors and stuff like that enables that sort of stuff to become a reality. We've got six more. Five more. Yeah, five more season in review podcasts to go. And then on Sunday, the massive mega NBA mock draft with myself and about seven or eight other writers will be doing that one, going through the entire first round and making our selection. So make sure you're tuning in there and telling all your friends about it. I think it'll be an entertaining show with lots of NBA draft talk. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.